Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Fourth Age. We'll be talking this week about our favorite Ogier this episode, Loyal, son of Ardent, son of Halon. Things have been a bit busy lately, so I won't be doing my Wheel of Time journal this week, but we'll catch up with it next time. With me, however, is Ben.
Yes, Carrie's not going to be joining us this week. She's got important women's circle business to attend to. I think an Aes Sedai has drug her in. She cannot escape those nets, as you well know. I do have a great crazy theory this week, and we'll get into it right after a little Wheel of Time news from Andrew.
Thanks, Ben. This episode, we'll be continuing our ongoing educational segment, What Were They Like in the Age of Legends? That and another update from Robert Jordan's blog. This is, as always, What You Should Know. This week, we will discuss what Mogedion was like in the Age of Legends. From information gathered by Nynaeve, Egwene, and Siwan, we know Mogedion was a spymaster extraordinaire for the Shadow. However, unnamed sources have recently revealed an even more insidious occupation which the Spider held before the War of the Power. It seems that before, and even for years after her turn to the Shadow, Lilin Moriel was a certified investment advisor. In her trade, she was so bereft of morals that Ishmael supposedly contracted her to work for the Dark One less for her abilities to ferret out his opposition's secrets and more for her ability to rig the various stock exchanges in his favor. Oh yeah, Ishmael states. Everyone who is anyone put their money where Lily told us, even Luce Thurin. Why, if he had survived and continued investing like I did, he'd have so much more to his name than an old cart horse, a sword, three wives, and a load of dependents to worry about. Just look at me. I can afford whatever I like. That's what 3,000 years of good investment advice will get ya. Thanks, Mogi. So there you have it, Mogedion. Bad at combat, good at running, and telling you where to put your cash. In other news, we have another update on Robert Jordan's blog. I'm not going to read the whole entry, but I will give you a glimpse of what it says. For the full transcript, you can find the blog at www.dragonmount.com/Robert Jordan. Here's the gist of the entry. It's another update from Wilson. The good news is that there's been no change since we last communicated, guys. Harriet and RJ had to fight like hell to keep it there, but that goes with the territory these days. He told you that he'd be visiting the Mayo on every 90 days, and that last month's visit was the first of those. Things don't always go according to plan when you're in a fight. You have to shift and adapt to the situation. Their visit last month lasted longer than expected. The medication regime had to be changed due to some pretty nasty side effects. Testing required that RJ come off his blood thinner, the steroid, and the miracle drug, Revlimid. After months on the experimental drug got him into a near normal range, he was being pulled off for at least 30 days. We held our breath. The grand news is that the Lambda Light Chain number that was 2.7 a month ago was tested at on 2.74. Freaking amazing. The polyps and the mass he described before are also gone. We joked that when they denied him food for over a day in preparation for further testing, that his body looked at... or that his body looked for nourishment, and there sat the aforementioned mass looking, well, pretty damned appetizing. Gone. So, back on Revlimid. Pray that the numbers continue downward, that his body continues the slow march of shedding the beta amyloids deposited, and that he regains his strength. A little later, he also adds, long road ahead of us, gang. I've looked, but I can find no one of the yellow available. Recovery will take a lot of time. I've asked before, now I beg. Patience, please. No news is good news. Peace be on you all. Wilson, brother/cousin, 4th of 3.
Very, very good news, of course. Always like to hear that RJ's doing well, so we wish you best, RJ.
Of course, yeah, we always wish you the best. Every time we get some news, we always tell you the same thing, and I hope anytime you listen to our podcast, you get the point where everybody's rooting for you.
Welcome to Ben's Crazy Theory of the Week.
Before we get into our crazy theory, which we always do, we want to let you know that there is some spoiler warnings coming up. Let you be aware that we're going to be talking about books that if you haven't read yet, you might be very disappointed to learn the information we'll be discussing. So please just be aware of that and know that you possibly could be spoiled. All right, this is another time for Ben's Crazy Theory. This is actually a little bit of a play on words here. This Ben's Crazy Theory is coming from a different Ben. We've got our producer, I call him Ben Number 2 just because I'm arrogant enough to dub myself Number 1. So, yeah, he wrote us in Crazy Theory, and it's crazy enough that I definitely think that we need to pass it along to you. Ben writes an email, and I'm going to start quoting. I'm reading The Eye of the World again, and I've noticed something in Chapter 31. Rand and Matt stay at the Grinwells' farm. Els has yet to become a major character, but on page 388, blah, 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 Els is described as staring at the boys whenever her parents aren't looking, and it continues to look and continues to eye them, especially Rand. And this is the crazy theory. Quote, in later books, Els has become stubborn and somewhat of a meddler. I think Els has continued to harbor a fascination for Rand, maybe not even knowing what she is doing, or maybe not even knowing that he is the Dragon Reborn, and has hidden it as if under her parents' gaze. And because she is a meddler, I hypothesize that she will be the one to actually kill Rand. So there's two theories there, one that Rand will die, and that Els will be the one to kill him. Back to quoting, perhaps at the urging of Mesaana, who was in the White Tower, we know that Els did go to the White Tower for a little bit, what I see happening is everyone converging on the White Tower, Rand and his entourage, Mat Tuon, Perrin, Fael, everyone, this is where Els will strike and Rand will die in order to live again. Well, that's certainly crazy enough to pass along, I'm sure you'll agree with that. I'm going to disagree with that. Mainly because I don't think Rand's going to die. But as far as the entire, if you do accept the fact that Rand's going to die, and just to hypothesize that, yes, let's just say in theory that Rand will die, we know that for a fact, let's just pretend we do, I cannot imagine the most incompetent novice, Els Grinwell, being the one to kill him. I don't think there can be any sort of fate that might have been started whenever she stared at him in her father's inn. I cannot imagine that any, you know, strong bit of fate started there that's strong enough to actually have her kill the Dragon Reborn. So, Ben 2, I like your theory. It's creative, but Just not going to hold up for me. What do you guys think?
I think that Rand is going to die. I almost have no doubt that he's going to die. A lot of people disagree, though. I don't really think it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be Els Grinwell. Of course, she doesn't seem too. At least to me, she doesn't seem too important of a character to actually finish it off. I think the person that's going to finish it off is going to be the Dark One. Shortly before Rand actually does imprison him again, and he simply dies from his injuries. I don't think there's going to be any particular traitor. Although, if you think about it, there has to be some type traitor. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the last book. There has to be some kind of surprise. I wouldn't have any doubt that someone turns out to be a traitor. How about this crazy theory? Maybe Else Grinwell isn't exactly Else Grinwell. Maybe she is Masana, but I'm not going to go there. Well, maybe we'll talk about that next time when we talk about her. But no, I definitely think Rand is going to die, but I don't think it's going to be her that does it.
Yeah, I kind of have to concur with everyone else. Like I said, I do also think that it's a really great theory, but at the same time, there's a little bit of proof that Else wasn't even in the tower anymore by later in the series. At one point, while
she gets thrown out for something.
While Egwene and Nynaeve are there before they set out, I think in the third book, they run after who they think is her, and later, upon talking to someone else, they find out that she's actually already been sent home. She could barely do anything in the way of channeling, and they just sent her home as soon as they were sure that she wasn't gonna, you know, do anything that would harm herself or anybody else.
You know what's funny about her too, in the third book, and no one really talks about this too much, but there's a very, very small scene right after Matt gets healed from the dagger. The first day when he actually leaves the tower, when he's still kind of tied there, he's testing the waters to see if he can actually leave Tarvalon, which of course he couldn't. He actually runs into Else Grinwell coming from somewhere, and it's never elaborated exactly where she's coming from. I mean, if she's there, then she just got to the tower. What's she doing walking around Tarvalon? That's never really explained.
Yeah, I thought it was explained.
Was it?
I thought the way I understood it was that was that Els was actually that Els was Lanfear. Whenever she was parading around with the Mask of Mirrors or whatever you call it, you know, the little disguise with the power, because that's what happened whenever. That Lanfear actually brought that message to Egwene and Nynaeve, and she wanted to, one, see Matt, and she wanted to do the little, sort of trap with, the trap with Elaine and Nynaeve, with the entire Grey Man incident before that. I'm pretty sure that was Lanfear, because didn't she appear before Rand, or excuse me, before Matt, after he got healed?
Yeah, just right after he got healed, she appeared to him. I didn't know, though, maybe I just forgot that. I didn't realize that when he met her, was, wow.
I think in the typical RJ subtlety, I think he slipped it in there, and I don't think he actually, just came out and said it, but that wouldn't be RJ style anyway. I think that's who that is, though. Lanfear, maybe that's my crazy theory, maybe that's a better one, that Els was actually Lanfear sneaking in there. So I'm pretty sure that was it. If I'm wrong, send me an email.
Our character of the week this week is going to be one of, I think, hopefully, everybody's favorite characters. We're going to talk about Loial this week. Physically, Loial, he's the biggest Wheel of Time main character. And I mean big in two different ways. He's 10 feet tall. He has pointed ears with tufts of hair. He does have black hair with the very long eyebrows that hang down. And there is another mention in the books that he has a lot of chest hair, too. So he comes from... let me start that part over. He comes from Steading Shangtai. He leaves the Steading, even though he's much too young to leave. In Carrion, he meets Rand, and from then on, he actually seems to pretty much be at the center of every main event that happens in the books from that period on. My thoughts on Loial. I think he's the most level character out of all the characters. He seems to be the only one that doesn't make any crazy rash decisions. He always seems to have everybody's thoughts in mind. He never wants to let anyone down. He's very gentle, but if he picks up an axe, he knows how to use it. And I think there's going to be a time and a place, not that he hasn't before, but I think that he's really going to show what a big 10-foot tall looking Loial can do. What do you guys think?
That's going to be awesome to see a big 10-foot tall Loial showing what he can do. Exactly what you said. I definitely think he has that fierceness in him. one of my favorite Loyal moments was in, I think it was book two, whenever he kills the Trolloc that was chasing after Rand in Kyrian. He kills the Trolloc, and even though it's this horrible, terrible creature, he's moved by the fact that he's actually killed. It matters to him. It's not that he's become jaded, and it's still early in the books, but still, he hasn't, you know, he hasn't progressed to the point where he just thinks killing is not a big deal. He eventually does some more of it in later books, but, you know, that's a point I always remember whenever he first does it, and he doesn't like it, and... You know, you can sort of sense that in this long series there's going to be a whole lot more killing, and he doesn't like it, but he's, you know, willing to face it, basically because of Rand. Because not of any Taviren pull, I think he is one of Rand's closest friends. He's someone that Rand trusts, and I think that was sort of the point where Rand really made him his friend, whenever he saved his life, you know, but he still kept that sense of reality that Rand needs right now, as far as, you know, hating to kill, not being just hard as stone, but being a real person, too.
Yeah, I've always been really impressed with Loyal, as far as just the sheer depth that he has. Especially since he's the first Ogier we met. He has this just kind of constant... I don't know exactly how to express it. I mean, he very appropriately named. He has
true.
A great dedication to pretty much everything he does. He stands up consistently for what is right. When the Trollocs en masse attack the Stone of Tyr, he like barricades women and children in a room and holds the door against all these different Trollocs that are coming, you know, to attack and whatnot, just because, you know, he knows it's the right thing to do, and he's not afraid to put his body on the line for anyone. I mean, it doesn't even have to be someone he knows or he especially cares about. And it's just he is such a genuinely good character that it's really great, because yeah, when the time comes and that, and you have to pick up an axe or a quarterstaff or whatever you have to pick up, and that Loyal's right there on the front, and you know it's a really great thing. I really base all Ogier kind of on how I perceive him, kind of like I judge most Aes Sedai based on Moraine, because she's the first of them that I met in the series.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that I kind of expect all of them to have this streak in some, you know, fashion or another, but he ultimately, you know, comes out as being that first kind of shining beacon, and I think that's gonna really play a part in that kind of last book. When, you know, he goes to speak at the Great Stump, which I'll get to in just a second. The other thing that really catches me about Loyal is his dedication to his book. I mean, he has constantly wanted to write this book about, specifically about Rand, but about everybody and his entire experience outside of the Steading, and, you know, the culmination of the end of the Third Age. And I kind of see that maybe one of the quotes, because you know how they have a quote at the beginning before the prologue and a quote there at the end of every book, and that I fully expect one of those quotes to come out of Loyal's book. I don't know why. It seems an
Ooh.
Interesting little thing for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that's
good.
It'd
be neat to have him quoted somewhere else, like just to show you that, yes, something of Loyal's survived the Third Age and is kept on in the Fourth Age. But yeah, as I kind of said just a second ago, Loyal's got a big task ahead of him. He has to go and try to convince the Ogier not to leave. And try to convince them not only not to leave, but to stand and fight with the humans. Which is something that the Ogier on Rand's side of the ocean don't, you know, necessarily aren't amazingly inclined to do. So it's kind of wonder, you know, is he going to be able to do it? Is he not? I don't know.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting task. I've got a little point that I'd like to bring up about Loial. His upcoming impending marriage that we read about in Book 11, it actually is interesting because you were talking earlier, you said that Loial is his perfect name. You know, he's just so loyal and so dedicated. This is sort of my thoughts on how that sort of affects his marriage. He doesn't want to get married, I don't think, yet, because he sort of has kind of a realistic expectation of what marriage is going to be like. He knows it's going to be tough, a lot of hard work, and so he wants to do a good job, but he doesn't want to give, you know, his wife 100% of his attention and focus, because right now he wants to give his attention and focus to Rand, and I don't think they've said it quite like that, but I think that's one of the biggest reasons why Loial, you know, is always avoiding his mother and avoiding Elder Haman and avoiding, I can't even remember the female ogre he was going to marry. What's
like
her name?
Erith or Erith.
You guys remember?
Yeah, something like that. Era.
Yeah. There you go, something like that. He doesn't want to get married because, you know, right now he's loyal to Rand. That's where he wants to stay. He wants to stay as Rand's friend, continue being with him and write the book, and, you know, now he realizes he's got a task, so he's got some, you know, work to do, and he doesn't want to devote all his time to his marriage. He wants to devote it to Rand.
Andrew, you brought up earlier, you're right. I love the fact that he always has his books with him. Every time Robert Jordan mentions Loial carrying his books with him, I always think, wow, I'm reading a book right now. I know it seems like the craziest thing, you know, but it's like, well, I'm carrying a book, you know. So I think, in a way, I think Robert Jordan likes to use that to relate Loial to the reader, and I think with a good intention. He seems to be the most, like I said before, he seems to be the most normal and level-headed character in the books. He's truly the only one that has good intentions 100% of the time. I think every single one of the other characters can be selfish. Sometimes there's some gray area. Are they doing things for the right reasons? But I think for him, I think he shoots a pretty straight arrow. I think he is the good guy in the Wheel of Time.
That's a good point. You never really have any questions about his intentions or sincerity. You know, I think that, you know, Swan is good, but she's got her own intentions, and Rand is good, but he's got his own perspective, and Perrin and everything. That's a good point. I never thought about that. Him being the only true character, if that makes sense. Only true, natural, pure good, pure and clean as the wind-driven snow, as the saying goes, or something. But, yeah, that's a good point. He's definitely clear like that, which makes one of my least favorite scenes of the book painful. You know, whenever people manipulate him, like Fael did in Book 4, whenever she was doing the entire, you know, making sure she came along whenever Perrin was trying to keep her behind, and how she was saying, no, you can't ride with me, and, you know, you must take me, Loial, and you could just see how he was, like, so torn and conflicted. He gave his word, but he wants to be loyal to his friend Perrin, and it's just, you know, Fael put him in that really nasty spot, which was painful to read. It was so awkward and so unjust, and you just felt for Loial because, you know, he was just such a tough spot.
There are spots where you really just, you do have to feel sorry for him, because he is. He's, you know, people do, whether they mean to or not, take advantage of him on a good number of occasions, and it's just like, why do you do that to him? And it kind of, you know, plays against the fact that in some cases Loial is also a little bit of natural and innocent comedy as well. I remember at least one scene where either, I think Rand is doing something important, but it might have had, like, maybe Loghain or Perrin or one of the other major characters in the same room, and they describe Loial as, like, sitting on this chair that's way too small for him, almost like a stool, you know, with, like, his big teacup-sized eyes, you know, staring at what was going on and hurriedly and frantically writing in this little itty-bitty book of notes that he's got in his hand with this, you know, pen that's, you know, fit for his, you know, sausage-sized fingers, and he's, like, you know, scribbling frantically, and I'm sitting here imagining, you know, him, this massive, you know, 10-foot-tall person perched on this tiny little stool with this little book, kind of scribbling really quickly, trying to get every word down. And it's just kind of,
Yeah.
I don't know. It creates a really great image in my mind, which, you know, I'm always about imagery in some way, shape, or form.
That is really funny, and also some of the scenes with Egwene's mother in the inn whenever they arrive in book four, and she gives him like this big old porridge bowl of tea, and it's like just super small in his hand, and she's obviously very nervous, and she wants to be polite, but she doesn't really know what to make of this huge creature eating, you know, drinking gallons of tea from her little, you know, itty bitty, or from this, you know, huge porridge bowl or something. It just comes up with, it's funny in my mind. I love the imagery of Loial. Everything he does is funny, just because he's
There's
so big.
There's going to be a point at Tarmon Gaiden when it comes time for Loial to pick up the axe or a tree or whatever he's going to pick up and start fighting with. During the last battle, do you think that that Loial will live? Do you think that Robert Jordan can put pen to paper and write the death of Loial, or do you think it'll just be too hard for him and too hard for us listeners, not listeners, too hard for him and too hard for us readers to read? What do you think?
Well, I have a small theory on that. This actually might be a crazy theory, but I don't think it's that crazy. I think it actually makes a bit of sense. I think whenever it comes last battle time, that Rand is going to entrust somebody of importance, probably Min or maybe his kids. I'm not really sure how that's going to play out, to be honest. The entire kids thing might be tough, but I think Loial is the only person that Rand will trust his kids or Min's life with. So I think he's going to try and, you know, kind of like he did at the Stone of Tyr, is, you know, massing all the women and children and holding the Trollocs out. I think he's going to be sort of a big guard in that respect, you know, sort of being the only person that Rand can trust with his loved ones. So I think that'll be his approach, his place, his niche in the final battle.
Yeah, it's a tough call. We've seen a number of times over the course of the books where Loial has been put against amazing odds. He's always in the thick of things and always protecting someone else, always carrying, you know, someone who's wounded, or, you know, keeping the enemy at bay, and it keeps setting us up over and over for, you know, him to die the valiant hero's death defending other people, and no one who reads it wants to see it happen. And I honestly don't know what I would do if Loial ends up dying, because I would expect it, but at the same time, I want him to live, because I want him to be that kind of, you know, and so I finished the book, and he lived happily ever after to the ends of his days, which were a long, long time, you know, that kind of Bilbo-esque ending, even though, you know, the size proportion is greatly different.
One thing that's interesting about Loial is, and even when I said it, it's hard to say and hard to think of, about him dying. No one really thinks of him as their favorite character, though, which is interesting. I mean, I was at DragonCon, and we went through about 30, 35, 40 of us. We went through who our favorite characters were, and I don't believe that Loial was even mentioned, but I'll guarantee you that everybody listening to the podcast cringes when I say, can Robert Jordan write Loial dying? Even it's hard to think of for anybody that reads the books, but no one says he's their favorite
character.
That's
a good point.
You know, he's maybe a little underestimated.
I think he tends to get overlooked, I think, which actually we sort of can say the same thing. It took us how many, 30 podcasts before we actually talked about Loial, so I guess we're guilty of the same thing. But yeah, I mean, he does sort of blend in, you know, because he's not the main one making decisions, but he's certainly always there, and you just gotta, you know, you gotta love Loial.
Oh yeah, completely, and I totally, you know, echo, you know, the same set and sentiments. And it's weird that such a massive, you know, character can kind of sometimes fall into the background, you know, until he makes himself known, and you know, he's the one of the greatest, you know, really kind of lovable teddy bears of the series. Even I keep using all these weird analogies to refer to him, and it's kind of odd that way, but you know, yeah, I mean, honestly, I will say that, you know, amongst the many characters that I have to put on there on my top, you know, list of favorite characters, and that he does actually rank in there, but wouldn't have been the first one to come to mind. So it's kind of it's an interesting thing. And like I said, I just, you know, I he definitely has a good vote in my opinion for surviving and whatnot, if nothing else, just so that, you know, his wife can rail on him for having been out of the steading too long, and, you know, you need to settle down, and, oh, but I need to finish my book, you know, kind of thing. And
before we finish up for this week of the Fourth Age, I do want to give everyone our email information. It's podcast@dragonmount.com, or you can visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
You can also leave us fan feedback on our forums, or you can leave us a voice message at 1-888-333-7690, or via audio on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/fourthage.
Next week we'll be talking about my personal favorite character, another guy who sometimes can get overlooked, Mr. Tom Marilyn, the Court Bard. We'll be breaking down some of his very complex intricacies. Following that, we'll be talking about Loghain, another guy who's got a lot of intricacies, and then the Aiel, who, there's tons of stuff to talk about that. So don't forget to send us your feedback about those, Tom, Loghain, and the Aiel.
Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. And before you sign off, I have one thing for you to think about before our next podcast. Imagine if Bilbo Baggins invited Loyal over for tea. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Take care. Light's blessings on you all.
May you walk in the light.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The music for our podcast is brought to you by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.